It is Monday, February 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the trial of a top suspect in the 2015 Paris terror attacks opens in Brussels. The Trump administration considers stepping up pressure on the government of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. And the Grammy Awards face calls for gender equality. It's all ahead. The first trial against top surviving Paris attack suspect Salah Abdeslam opened in Brussels Monday amid tight security and a packed courtroom. Journalists present in the courtroom said the 28-year-old Abdeslam appeared clad in a white sweater and unshackled, surrounded by hooded security guards dressed entirely in black. The four-day trial will not deal directly with the November 2015 attacks that killed 130 people around Paris, in which Abdeslam is believed to be the sole surviving participant, but rather with a March shootout with police when he was on the run. Reporter Lisa Bryan in Paris tells me about the first day's court proceedings.
What happened in the court was pretty much what a lot of people expected. Salah Abdeslam, who's considered the top surviving suspect of these November 2015 series of shootings and bombings in Paris, he was not expected to really talk, and he mostly did not, although at one point he did say he didn't want to answer questions. He said that he felt that Muslims were unfairly judged. He said he would, you know, place his faith in God, and he was somewhat provocative. But, you know, he hasn't been speaking for almost 2 years, ever since, pretty much a little bit after, since he was caught. So this man, who many people feel might have a huge trove of information, not just about the Paris attacks, but also about the Brussels attacks that took place in March 2016, has not said anything. And so people had hoped, okay, finally he would talk, but most people kind of felt that he probably wouldn't. And that was the case on Monday.
Yeah, I read a report that apparently his hair has grown long and he has a beard.
Yeah, he's a very different Salah Abdeslam than the photos showed about 2 years ago. They had him sort of boyish looking and clean cut. He was known as kind of a petty criminal. His original lawyer, who then came back and became his lawyer in this trial, said he had the intelligence of an empty ashtray and that he was just basically, you know, a petty thief from this Belgium Brussels neighborhood called Molenbeek. So, yeah, that was his initial sort of look. He actually even ran a bar with his brother, who was killed in the Paris attacks. So that was his first look, and then his new sort of profile is now this Islamic State group, quote-unquote fighter, at least according to what prosecutors believe, and a very different man who's been 2 years in almost complete isolation, 24-hour video surveillance in a high-security prison outside Paris.
Is it known at this point, it might not be, but was he one of the leaders of this group, or was he sort of more of a participant, a follower?
Yeah, I will back up before going a little bit further to say that this particular trial in Brussels doesn't directly deal with the November 2015 attacks in Paris. It actually deals with an incident, a shootout with police that took place in March 2016, right before the Brussels attacks, when Abdeslam had been months on the run and he was arrested a few days after the shootout. So to start with this, basically, it's important in terms of the kinds of information that's going to be coming out. It's going to deal particularly with this trial. He faces up to 40 years in jail with a fellow defendant, and the defendant is Tunisian national and a bit younger than Abdeslam. And so this particularly deals with this very narrow case. But of course, it has to do with the Brussels attacks and the Paris attacks, because many investigators believe they're closely linked.
This trial is occurring as there is a sort of a changing terror landscape in Europe. How have the defeats of the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq impacted that?
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Sarah. What's happened is that both the terrorist attacks in Brussels and in Paris were considered, I mean, the Islamic State group claimed responsibility for them and is believed to have financed them, provided all kinds of support. Abdeslam was believed to be a top sort of logistician in the Paris attacks. But what's happened is that since then, as you've pointed out, the Islamic State has been beaten back both in Syria and in Iraq. And so this kind of support, logistics and financial support, is basically drying up or has dried up. And so what experts say is what we're going to be seeing increasingly are these sort of lone attackers who are going to be staging attacks. And we've seen this also elsewhere in Europe subsequently. And this could be increased as Islamic State fighters return to Europe, although they apparently are not returning in as many numbers as authorities had feared at first, but that still remains to be seen. But what experts say is a lot of these fighters have been either killed or jailed in Syria and Iraq, and a lot of people who are returning from these places are either women or children.
Reporter Lisa Bryant in Paris. Well, time now for social media. Democratic lawmakers are pushing Monday for the release of their rebuttal to a Republican-approved memo alleging that the FBI abused its power in probing Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. The minority Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee are calling for a vote, clearing the path to disclose their views on the underlying classified information that Republicans used in a four-page memo they released last week. Well, in a Twitter remark early Monday, President Donald Trump assailed the top Democrat on the panel, referring to him as Little Adam Schiff. The California congressman has called the Republican memo a political hit job on the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The president said Schiff is desperate to run for higher office. Trump claims Schiff is one of the biggest liars and leakers in Washington, right up there. He tweeted with former FBI Director James Comey, Virginia Senator Mark Warner, former Central Intelligence Agency Director John Brennan, and former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, all of whom Trump has feuded with over national security issues. Trump wrote, "Adam leaves closed committee hearings to illegally leak confidential information. Must be stopped." Schiff, meanwhile, responded on Twitter saying, "Mr. President, I see you've had a busy morning of executive time. Instead of tweeting false smears, the American people would appreciate it if you turned off the TV and helped solve the funding crisis, protected Dreamers, or really anything else." Well, also trending today is hashtag Berlin Wall. The German Foreign Office tweets, "The hashtag Berlin Wall stood for 10,361 days, and 10,361 days ago today it fell. Let's work together to preserve the things that unite rather than separate us." Guy Verhofstadt tweets, "As of today, the hashtag Berlin Wall, which divided our continent for decades, has been down for longer than it was up. Let's keep on tearing down walls and fight for a united Europe." That's a look at social media. Here's a look at some of the top news stories that are trending. The Maldives president declares a state of emergency in his country. An ivory investigator is found dead in Kenya. Turkey's president meets Pope Francis. And a former gymnastics doctor is sentenced to an additional 40 to 125 years in prison for sex abuse. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new vaccine therapy developed by Stanford University researchers may someday provide hope for cancer patients. Working with mice, the scientists injected minute doses of two vaccines they created directly into solid tumors that had developed in the animals. Stanford University Professor of Oncology, Dr. Ronald Levy, MD, is the senior author of a study that outlines the research team's findings. According to the study, this vaccine can treat many different types of cancer. Dr. Levy says the two-part vaccine treatment stimulates the immune cells only within the tumor itself, but the researchers observed effects that included the elimination of tumors all over the animal. A human clinical trial to test the effect on the treatment in lymphoma patients began in January. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we get a report on a call for gender equality at the Grammy Awards. The Trump administration is considering a major escalation in the pressure campaign on the socialist government of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro by restricting the country's oil imports. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson made the suggestion Sunday in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Now, the situation is becoming quite dire in Venezuela. So one of the aspects of considering sanctioning oil is what effect will it have on the Venezuelan people? And is it a step that might bring this to an end, to a more rapid end? Not doing anything to bring this to an end is also asking the Venezuelan people to suffer for a much longer time. So we are looking at options, and in particular, we're looking at how to mitigate the impacts on U.S. business interests, but also there are other regional countries that it would affect as well. And we want to be mindful that we do not want to harm them with an action we take either. So it is under study, it's under consideration, and we've had exchanges. When I was in Mexico City, we had an exchange today about it. And I think the point being that all of us in the region want to see Venezuela return to its constitution. This is heart-wrenching to watch what is happening to the Venezuelan people.
The U.S. imposed financial and targeted sanctions on Caracas last year. Tillerson's comment comes as Venezuela prepares to conduct a snap election in the next 2 months aimed at extending the rule of Mr. Maduro. Jennifer McCoy, a political science professor at Georgia State University and former director of the Carter Center's Americas program, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty this would represent a major escalation in the Trump administration's policy of pressure on the Maduro government.
Right now, the U.S. is one of two countries who are the primary buyers with dollars of Venezuelan oil. That is, besides the United States, India. The other countries that receive Venezuelan oil are paying discounted rates, such as Caribbean countries, or receiving oil in payback for loans, such as China. So if the United States cuts off imports of Venezuelan oil, that would reduce significantly the revenue that the Venezuelan government receives for its oil.
Why take this action now?
I imagine that the Secretary of State said that because the United States is concerned at the lack of progress in the dialogue or the talks between the government and the opposition, and the announcement by the government that they wish to have early presidential elections, snap elections, before the end of April, which would not give the opposition much time to prepare, nor the Electoral Council much time to prepare the audits and the necessary controls to make sure that it's a transparent election. So I imagine that the United States is trying to escalate the pressure to resolve those questions and come to some form of agreement.
This is a week-long trip to Latin America, and at the beginning of that trip on Friday, Mr. Tillerson suggested Venezuelan leader Maduro could be toppled by his own military.
I think he was saying that that could be a possibility. I don't think he was suggesting that they do it. In other words, not, you know, making a recommendation for them to do it, but rather saying if there's going to be a change, you know, sometimes it comes to that, that it's the military inside a country that has in the past in many Latin American countries risen up saying that they're defending the Constitution and ousting a government.
This trip comes as Mr. Maduro appears to be trying to cement his reelection by the end of April.
Yes, he certainly has. He's already declared himself a candidate and is campaigning, which is another means for gaining an advantage over any competitors. Meanwhile, there are a great number of restrictions on the opposition or potential competitors. They've prohibited or disqualified a number of leading opposition candidates from even running. They have disqualified some of the major opposition political parties from participating. So under current conditions, it does not look like it would be a very competitive or fair election process.
Jennifer McCoy says the Venezuelan opposition is demoralized after last year's often violent anti-government protests that led to more than 100 deaths but resulted in no major changes. The two sides are engaged in political talks in the Dominican Republic. If they fail to reach an agreement, she says the opposition will be left with the choice of whether to boycott the election. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Gender equality has long been an issue in the music industry, and the topic has surfaced again following the recent Grammy Awards ceremony. VOA's Jim Stevenson finds out more from Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald about a petition being circulated by singer Vanessa Carlton.
Making my way downtown, walking fast, faces pass and I'm homebound.
What we're talking about today is Neil Portnow, president of the Recording Academy, is in a bit of hot water over some remarks he made following the Grammy Awards. Vanessa Carlton, the artist, you might remember her from some hit records she's had, she has a petition calling on Neil to step down as president of the Recording Academy. The petition has reached its initial target of 10,000 signatures. It's now past 12,000. It has got a new target of 13,000, and how it all began was after the Grammy Awards, the 60th annual Grammy Awards. Critics of the Grammys decried lack of female representation among the awards. The only award of the night featuring a female recipient was Alessia Cara, winning Best New Artist. In fact, only 9% of the 899 Grammy nominees in the last six awards were women. Portnow initially responded that women needed to step up to be part of the music industry on an executive level, and female artists immediately weighed in that women have been stepping up since the beginning of time, and that female artists are more relevant and creative than they have ever been, and that they are being underrepresented. Perhaps Portnow should step down, they said. Portnow has been heading the Academy since 2002. Speaking to the New York Times on Tuesday, Portnow clarified his position. He said his comments were taken out of context, and he said they do not convey my beliefs and the point I was trying to make. He said the music industry should recognize that women face unique barriers that men do not, and that we must actively work to eliminate those barriers, and that he remains committed to making the music industry safer and more inclusive. Now, of course, the Me Too movement was very much in evidence during the Grammys, as I'm sure it will be in evidence during the Academy Awards. I really wonder if Neil Portnow is going to survive this particular onslaught of criticism. His remarks really seem to have touched a nerve. And, of course, it goes much deeper than just underrepresentation for awards. Instances of sexism have been rampant in the music industry for as long as anyone can remember. And with all of these things coming to light now, his remarks were, you might say, unfortunate.
In this day and age, any remarks are going to be quickly transmitted to everyone. and magnified
put under the microscope.
As a result. So
absolutely.
You really have to watch what you're saying, and perhaps they were taken out of context, perhaps not. That's for everyone to decide who's involved.
Yep, so this is still very much a developing story as far as Neil Portnow and the Recording Academy are concerned.
Coming to light each and every week is the Top 20 Countdown List. You'll want to stay on top of it with Ray McDonald on VOA 1. Also follow him on Twitter.
Catch me at Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
Hold you tonight.
Well, these recent awards have certainly been very much impacted by the recent Me Too case. Well, in other news, a South Korean appeals court suspended a jail sentence handed down to billionaire Samsung Electronics heir Lee Jae-young and ordered his immediate release from prison on Monday. The Seoul Central District Court had sentenced the 49-year-old Lee in August to 5 years in prison for bribery in connection with a scandal that brought down the country's president, Park Geun-hye. The appeals court on Monday struck down several of the convictions and reduced the penalty on the remainder to a suspended prison sentence of 2.5 years. And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The State Department announced in January that Iran has been redesignated as one of the 10 countries of particular concern for engaging in or tolerating systematic, ongoing, and egregious violations of religious freedom. The state of religious freedom in Iran remains extremely poor. Human rights monitors report that Shamiram Isavi, the wife of Victor Bet Tamrez, who formerly led Iran's Assyrian Pentecostal Church, has been targeted on the basis of her faith and sentenced to 5 years in prison for supposed crimes against national security. In July, her husband was sentenced to 10 years on similar charges. The couple's son, Ramiel, has also been accused of purported national security crimes because of his faith and his father's ministry. Human rights monitors note that Christian converts are being increasingly targeted in Iran, with at least 10 individuals receiving long prison terms over the past year. The persistent repression of Baha'is in Iran continues as well. The Center for Human Rights in Iran reports that imprisoned Baha'i teacher Ozitoh Rafizodeh was recently told she would be granted furlough from prison only if she repented and apologized for educating Baha'is online. She and her husband, Peyman Kushk Baghi, also a teacher and a member of the Baha'i community, were arrested in 2015 and convicted of national security crimes and of belonging to an illegal group. Baha'is have long been one of the most persecuted minorities in Iran, as a new online archive of official documents, news articles, audio recordings, and other primary sources established by the Baha'i international community demonstrates in great detail. Designating Iran a country of particular concern because of the government's ongoing violations of religious freedom demonstrates the importance the United States places on respect for this human right. As President Donald Trump said in his proclamation on Religious Freedom Day, January 16th, the United States is the paramount champion for religious freedom because we do not believe that conscience rights are only for Americans. We will be undeterred in our commitment to monitor religious persecutions and implement policies that promote religious freedom. Through these efforts, we strive for the day when people of all faiths can follow their hearts and worship according to their consciences.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.